Checkerfin.
Fordham is always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly.
Sex,
nationals. Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school. Pain and suffering.
Learning and teaching.
In your face. In your face.
Listen to your words that they be preaching. Cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, a man who ate 12 large crabs on Saturday, Rick Hess. Welcome,
hey,
Rick.
Hey, Mike. Thank you.
How are you?
Oof, good. The crabs were good.
They were good. They were good.
How many did you put down there, big guy?
I had two.
Huh. And so your wife ate more than you, didn't she?
She did. She's 6 months pregnant, so that's okay.
Oh.
And I get bored after a while. I just, those crabs, you know, hammering away at them. It's just, so I had the crab cakes, which is much easier. Somebody else went through, did the work of picking out the crab for me.
You know, isn't that just like an aspiring part of the blob?
Yeah.
Let somebody else do all the work, sit in the cushy seat.
Yeah, that's right.
And just pump stuff into your mouth.
That's right. You know, we have all these legions of staff and interns here at Fordham so that, you know, I don't have to do any heavy lifting. It's great. Speaking of which, I understand you have a new member of your team.
We do. We have, in fact, he's here with us today.
Yeah.
With me today is Thomas Gift.
Yes.
A new member of the AEI team. Longtime fan, first time attendee at the Petrilli Gadfly Esplanade here on K Street and whatever street.
All right, Thomas, it's good to have you here with us. Let's get going right into the show today. Of course, pardon the gadfly. We've got a little interview slash debate on No Child Left Behind. And then Kobe will serve up some education news of the weird because Liam is sipping pina coladas somewhere.
Where's
on
Liam?
Vacation.
Florida.
He's back in.
He's in Florida?
Mm-hmm.
He's in Florida.
For a week.
They let him back in the state?
Apparently.
After that whole
suspension debacle.
A suspension, naked pajamas.
It's hard to
commando thing?
I know. Ugh. But you know what? Liam has gotten 4 op-eds published in major regional newspapers in the last week.
Really?
And how many have you gotten published?
What's a major regional newspaper, by the way?
Oh, like the Louisville paper, the Seattle paper.
What was he writing about?
About the Supreme Court decision.
Which one?
The race-based assignment.
Was he for or against it?
He was saying that, okay, now that that's over with, let's get on with closing the achievement gap. And
was this one of those Petrilli specials where he changed the lead paragraph and otherwise it was actually the same op-ed in 4 regional papers?
First of all, people have been doing that long before I came across it. All right. Second of all, I really had very little to do with them. But no, I should say they are quite different from city to city. He actually did research about what was happening in each community.
Wow.
Yes, that is impressive think tankery.
Wow.
All right. Well, let's get started. Playing
4 regional op-eds for Liam, huh?
In 1 week.
My goodness.
That's right.
My goodness.
Christina, topic number 1.
All right. A recent article in Education Week highlights a brewing battle over NCLB special ed provisions. One side thinks special ed students should be held to grade level standards and included in AYP calculations. The other side says the law needs more flexibility and should treat special ed students different for accountability purposes. Where do you fall on this one, Rick?
Well, I mean, the place to start is that the grade level standards are problematic for everybody. They're especially problematic for special needs kids, since part of the logic of identifying special needs kids is that they are, you know, frequently of learning disabilities or developmentally delayed. So I have no understanding, you know, other than do-gooderism and a crusade for social justice, why somebody thinks it would be a sensible accountability system to expect schools to have these people performing at the normal grade level expectation.
Well, the politics are fascinating. In this Education Week article, of course, all the special ed groups were crusading and advocating not to change No Child Left Behind at all. They like the fact that there is pressure on schools to pay attention to these kids, get them to grade level standards. Meanwhile, politicians and educators are, for the most part, saying, well, this is crazy. I mean, there's no way to get there. I don't know how they're going to solve this one, because the question comes down to who do you trust? That a lot of educators say, look, let's leave it to the IEP team, the individual educational plan team, to decide how much is enough to expect for these kids. But special ed advocates feel like those expectations are much too low.
And, you know, and in fact, of course, they are, you know, in many cases much too low. And, you know, the fact is you get all kinds of problems. Like historically, you got over-identification. NCLB tried to address this by limiting the number of special needs kids who could be excluded by calculation. But the fundamental insight is that, look, if kids have special needs, one should not expect them to be at, you know, normal achievement curves.
All right. Well, here's by the way, I think I'm just going to ignore that fake bell that Kobe tried.
That was a weak bell. Where's that real
crazy
bell, Kobe? What's going on here?
Kobe.
Did you lose the bell?
We're having technical difficulties with the bell. Some prankster stole the bell for their senior prank, so we don't have a bell.
Do you have like a ringtone on your phone you could use?
Maybe Christina could do the bell next time. All right. Well, hey, I just want to say this one thing on special ed. Why not? Let's just include special ed kids in the testing and accountability system, but not as a separate group. I think that would go a long way.
The special needs groups would have you by the toes.
They would. Okay, Christina, what's next?
All right, topic two. A proposed charter school in Georgia would give enrollment preference to children living in a predominantly white, middle-class neighborhood of racially divided Greene County. Supporters say the school is meant to attract more middle-class residents to the area, but charges of racism are flying. The county's four other public schools have open enrollment policies. Mike, do charter schools with enrollment zones run contrary to the spirit of the charter movement?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a real problem for the charter movement. This particular school, I mean, here we're talking about Georgia, which of course has a history of segregation, has a history of when the schools were desegregated, a lot of these private Christian academies sprung up to serve white students. This town that the school is in is divided by highway, the black community on one side, white community on the other. They decide to locate the school in the white community, which okay, but then there's going to be preference for kids that live near that school. And so I think, I think this is a problem. I think charter schools are much better off when they have a wide attendance zone. They make enrollment decisions by lottery. And then, therefore, we get away from any charges that charter schools are being set up to cater to, middle class or white families that just want to escape poor and African American.
Now, how is it that the Georgia law, I mean, most states don't allow schools to give regional preferences, do they?
Yeah, no. I mean, I guess within some limits, maybe within the entire district or within some sort of city line, I'm pretty sure that this school wouldn't qualify for federal startup money because, it really has to be those enrollment decisions have to be decided on a lottery in order to get that money.
Well, I'd like to know for certain that there actually has a formal enrollment zone, which gives an advantage. If that is indeed the case, and if that enrollment zone is a relatively well-off community I can absolutely see why folks would have concerns about that and raise questions. If, on the other hand, it's simply a case that school's been opened in kind of a white bread community and there's not a formal enrollment zone, then I think we're on slipperier ground.
Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, for God's sake. You know what that's like? That's at the end of Rocky III. Remember when Apollo and Rocky – remember Apollo was Rocky – Rocky was Apollo a favor after he beats up on Mr. T finally. And he's like, what's the favor? And Apollo's like, you can owe me a favor. And Rocky goes, this is extremely weird. And Apollo goes, like, mentally irregular, right? And they step in the ring and they're just wearing their safety gear and they're going to fight. And Apollo's, you want to ring the bell? Rocky's like, after you. Ding, ding, ding. And I was like, remember this? You remember this?
Oh, Rick, you're a fount of wisdom.
This is one of the great American movies, baby.
It is faintly familiar, yes. But it was a stirring rendition. Thank you. Christina, what's the next topic?
Oh, for God's sake.
And then the last of our random stories. Earlier this week, the Washington Post reported on a new study by Jay Green, which found that new schools are more likely to be named after features of their surrounding landscapes than after civic leaders. In most cases, schools pick innocuous-sounding names like Forest Park High School to avoid the controversy surrounding public figures. Rick, is this a case of political correctness gone way too far?
Before, I'd go in the ring. I get busted up. It didn't matter none. But now there's you, the kid. I don't want to lose what I got. All right. That was from the beach scene when Adrian talks him back down. Anyway, I don't know. I mean, it strikes me. It's not entirely clear to me how much insight or knowledge or civic unity is lent by calling a school George Washington High instead of Potomac High School. I mean, in fact, in some sense, the fact that people are conflict averse and shy away from using names, and that the only names I remember Jay Matthews mentioning seemed to be civil rights leaders who were head schools in Prince George's County. In some sense, this is kind of telling. And, what democracies do is they let people accommodate and shy away from stuff they want to shy away from. But, I don't know. I mean, I'm just utterly unconvinced. I went to W.T. Woodson High School. I have no idea to this day who W.T. Woodson was. I guess I just don't understand that the civic or kind of educational mission of a school is profoundly affected in any way by whether it's named after a person or a landfill.
Well, I went to Parkway West High School.
Is that after a person? Or
No. It's just a region of suburban St. Louis.
Jim Parkway.
There's the right way and the wrong way where the Parkway Rick.
Oh.
And no,
we, so was that y'all's chant?
Well, we were in Parkway West. West is best, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line is I was deprived of this opportunity to learn about some great leader in American history. Now, this is ridiculous. I mean, why do we need to fight our culture wars over school names? And anyways, I think a lot of these schools are naming them after regions that are, you know, considered to be affluent or, you know, have a brand name. So a Potomac High School, you know, here in suburban Maryland, where Potomac means wealthy and nice, you know, is something to boost the property values.
But you could also teach about throwing a quarter across it. Well, he didn't throw a quarter across the Potomac, did he?
No. George Washington?
Yes.
I doubt. I don't think they had quarters back then.
He crossed the Delaware. He threw something. Didn't he throw something across the Potomac?
Yes.
I think he did. I think he, in theory, did.
Okay.
But
that's impressive.
I don't know. So
is someone going to ring the bell one of these days?
I figured you guys would wind down soon enough.
Oh, for God's sake. Anyway. All right.
This is a debacle. Kobe, I mean, you could try a little bit.
Where's the bell?
I'm saved by the bell. All right. That's it. But hey, we may have no bell, but we have a really good interview / debate right now. Joining us today on the Education Gadfly Show is Matthew Ladner at the Goldwater Institute, who recently wrote a paper with Gene Hickok on No Child Left Behind for the Heritage Foundation. Matthew, welcome to the Education Gadfly Show.
Thanks for having me on.
So, Matthew, we want to talk about that article that you and Gene wrote, see where there might be some points of agreement, but also some disagreement. So give us the synopsis. What is your argument about No Child Left Behind and what needs to be done going forward?
Yeah, I mean, basically, our main concern is the race to the bottom. You know, No Child Left Behind basically came in and required states to do testing, put an appropriate focus on outputs instead of inputs, and has done some good things. But, you know, the basic problem is that the federal government has this, you know, sliding upward requirement to reach 100% proficiency by 2014, but has left the definition of proficient and the control over the tests of states. And so you don't need a PhD in game theory to figure out what's going to happen here, and that is that the states have started the process of dummying down their tests in order to avoid federal sanctions.
Okay. Well, listeners to the Gadfly Show know that, of course, at Fordham, we're worried about this too. Our solution that we've been promoting is national testing, to say that that's the only way you're going to solve this problem. What's your solution?
We are supporting the Cornyn and DeMint A-plus bill. We think that, you know, one way or another, there's going to need to be, you know, a way, you know, around this 2014 iceberg. And what A-plus essentially does would be to allow states to have a single unified system of testing. Right now here in Arizona, for instance, we have a state system and AYP as a matter of an agreement reached between states and the Department of Education. There could be a single system of testing you know, which would improve transparency and avoid the very real prospect of having, you know, 100% of kids pass a test that is completely meaningless.
Okay. All right. So you want to go back to having the states basically be in the driver's seat on this? But,
well, not entirely. I mean, there is still a role for the federal government in Cornyn and DeMint.
Okay. Well, explain this then. I mean, fundamentally, the question is how high to set the standards and how many kids can you expect to reach that standard under any system? So how do those decisions get made? I mean, is it a high standard and therefore 60% of the kids by 2014 is okay?
Well, I mean, under Cornyn and DeMint, this would be a matter for negotiation between each state and the federal government. And, you know, I mean, those are legitimate questions to ask. But what we want to avoid at all costs is sort of a transparency train wreck where it'd be the cruelest of ironies to have No Child Left Behind actually undermine transparency in public schools after having done quite a bit to improve it.
Right. Well, you know, I think we agree on that front, and we have a study coming out back to school time that's going to be looking at whether or not state tests have, in fact, gone easier. I think there's a lot of reason to be concerned that there is not transparency and that we just can't trust these test score results. But what I'm struggling to understand is how these negotiations are going to necessarily solve the problem. I mean, doesn't that open it up to political manipulation where politically favored states get better deals than other states? I mean, why not just move to one national standard and be done with it?
Well, of course, there's the principled federalist argument that would say that, you know, this is not an appropriate role for the federal government to play. And, you know, and quite frankly, I don't see national standards as being on the immediate list of possibilities. The last time there was a vote on this in the Senate, I believe it was 98-0 against national history standards. It may come, you know, if this sort of, you know, race to the bottom is allowed to play out, then perhaps, you know, those of you who support national standards will have their hands strengthened. But the cost of doing that would be catastrophic, in my opinion. It'd be a huge blow to the credibility of testing as a reform strategy. So I think it's much more appropriate to give states more flexibility, you know, to have some diversity amongst the states about what these systems look like. But, you know, better a mixed bag than a universal failure, which is kind of where we're headed now in the absence of some sort of change.
Okay. So, but it seems to me what you and Cornyn and DeMint are arguing for is in many ways to go back to the pre-NCLB days, you know, where we had a federal requirement for state accountability systems, but a lot more flexibility. You know, but back then, isn't it fair to say that there were states that still had low standards, had low expectations for how many kids had to meet those standards, weren't disaggregating by race or other levels, and basically said that as long as schools are making a minute amount of progress every year, even if their kids are way, way behind, they are A-okay. I mean, so how do you keep those low expectations from getting embedded when you turn, you know, to this more flexible approach?
Well, because the Department of Education would still have to okay these revised plans in order for them to be accepted. This is not a bill that would just, you know, turn the money back over to the states and allow them to do whatever they wanted. Mm. There is a role for the federal government in this. And, you know, I mean, unless they could reach an agreement with the feds, they'd be stuck in AYP, which, you know, would be the status quo. Now, there's problems with the status quo, and what we're really looking for here is, you know, some sort of a coherent response to what is going to be done about this problem, because it has to be addressed in this reauthorization cycle. I firmly believe that if it is not, then the race to the bottom will happen, and you know, the testing will be deeply discredited.
Yeah, well, I think we agree about that the 100% proficient by 2014 is something that's got to be addressed. I think you're right that it could really bring the whole standards-based reform enterprise down with it. Well, Matthew, thank you for coming on the show and for sharing your comments.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, how could listeners take a look at your paper? Where do they find it?
They just go to the Heritage website. It's www.heritage.org, and look for the, it's called Reauthorization of No Child Left Behind, Federal Management or Citizen Ownership of K-12 Education.
Okay, great. Matthew Ladner from the Goldwater Institute. Thanks, Matthew.
Great. Thank you.
All right, Rick. So Matthew Ladner and Gene Hickok are arguing that because of the race to the bottom, we should basically give up on the 100% proficiency by 2014.
I thought you also thought that.
Yes, but we think that you should also have national standards and tests. And they do not.
But you're not actually, what was the national standards piece part of their argument?
You mean the argument that you just listened to in our live interview a minute ago? Yes. No, they don't believe in national standards and testing.
Right, did they make that piece in the paper they wrote?
Yeah. They did. They attack national standards and testing. Yeah, they just want the federal government and the states to negotiate one by one what the accountability system has to be for each
state.
So
was there a ferocious back and forth in a debate we just listened to?
It was ferocious.
It caught me a little off guard.
You know, Rick, reminds me a little bit about when I read This Week in Education by Alexander Russo.
Uh-huh.
Alexander Russo, how do you say it? I always get it wrong. And Alexander will say things like, well, there's a new report out, but I haven't actually read it. If anybody has, just email me and tell me what you think. I'm just saying, you got to do your homework here, Rick. You got to do your homework.
Wait a minute. This is right. A guy who has staffers read reports.
Well, yeah. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't put my name on that. They put their name on it.
I didn't put my name on anything. I was just
asking. You're a host of the show, Rick. Can't you at least listen to the interview? Just kidding.
I'm doing what I can, baby.
All right. Well, as we said before, Liam is out, but that does not mean that News of the Weird is out. We have Kobe here to tell us what is weird this week.
In addition to that fabulous interview.
That's right. Kobe, what's weird?
For years, school tuck shops in New Zealand, that's a snack bar to you and me, have served low-fat milk, which the country's health ministry recommends as a way to moderate fat intake. But Rosemary Abbott's Ruse of Onehunga in Auckland wants kids to know what they're missing out on. Says Abbott's Ruse, quote, I've always liked cream and milk and butter, but had the idea in the back of my head that it's bad for me, end quote.
Kobe, could you do that again in a New Zealand accent?
Sorry, I tried that and it just didn't work.
Okay.
Luckily for the young, fleshy-cheeked Kiwi, she, quote, by chance came across an article on the internet and found there's another point of view, end quote. According to Abbott's ruse, full-fat milk can reduce the risks of asthma, bowel cancer, and infertility in women.
Mm-hmm.
She's even launched her own website, goodfat.net.nz, to promote pure, unadulterated moo juice in schools.
Mm-hmm.
Skeptics should note the website's disclaimer, however, which warns, quote, this is not meant to be a scientific site or a dietary recommendation site. The editors claim no authority in the matter of health and diet and have no qualifications with respect to health issues, end quote. Reassuring indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Rick, is there anything sweeter than gargling warm milk straight from the udder at the break of dawn?
Ooh. You know what they should do is they should give you little powdered chocolate dispensers. Because if you can just do a little squeeze between your cheek and gum, like they give you like a little plastic thing that only releases like this much. So when you take a shot of the milk, it kind of self-mixes in your mouth and you go. Kind of like when you're brushing your teeth when you're a kid and you're trying to squeeze around, you know. That would be awesome.
Wow. Wow. Did you ever do any cow tipping back in your day?
I never did. Although, you know, I remember when I used to date this gal in Champaign-Urbana. And we went and we saw that they had the cows with the plastic stomachs.
Uh-huh.
You know this? They do the surgery at these, like this is University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana. And they would do a surgery where they would remove the side of the cow's stomach and put a big plastic window in there. And this was like for the ag students and stuff. But you could go up and you could like kind of see a cow's inside.
While the cow, and the cow was alive?
Yeah.
No
it was
way.
Just eating its grass and you could watch like all the stomachs work.
And you thought about tipping that cow over.
I think that was an expensive cow, man. That would have been more than my car. So have you ever cow-tipped?
I have not ever cow-tipped, and I regret it.
Kobe?
I regret it.
I grew up on the rough and tumble streets of the inner city, Rick.
Christina?
Yeah.
Thomas?
I have not.
Well, this is something we should do. We should make a plan. We should make a cow-tipping plan. All right, well, I do think that is all the time we have for this week, though. Rick, I have to say.
I did give Mark Schneider a quarter last week. That's kind of like tipping a cow.
Oh, did you hear that, Mark? That's not a nice way to talk about that. NCES commissioner. All right, we have got to get out of here. Listeners, thanks, and we'll be back next week. Till then,
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli, the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.